The Street Theatre is presenting the Lucas Neff play, A Doll's House Part 2, from the 15th to the 23rd of June. This production will feature Rachel Berger in the role of Nora, as well as PJ Williams, Camilla Blunden and Nathalie Morris. To tell us more about this production, I'm delighted to welcome to the foyer the Artistic Director of The Street and the Director of A Doll's House Part 2, Carolyn Stacey. Carolyn, what attracted you to A Doll's House Part 2?
Well, the audaciousness of the act in and of itself was probably enough. The title just makes me laugh. So as soon as I knew of the play, I just had to read it. I'm a big fan of Lucas Neff anyway. I've really enjoyed other work of his. I've always sort of, in the back of my mind, thought he'd be an interesting writer to produce here in Canberra. And it's because he's just so incredibly writerly, a wonderful command of English language, always very interesting approach to even how a script is laid out on a page. There's a poetic sensibility, but there's wit and cleverness and big ideas, characters that are fascinating and difficult and funny. So all of those factors make you go, yes, I think this one is a world and a play to enter. But fundamentally, I would have to say the audaciousness of even in a moment, that idea of writing a sequel to Ibsen's A Doll's House.
Exactly. You're taking on Ibsen. So what does he actually do? So is it a sequel?
It is a sequel, absolutely, but with a very contemporary sensibility. And of course, I don't know how you feel about A Doll's House as a work, but I regard it as just still an incredibly subversive and radical piece of writing. As Shaw said, you know, the door slam at the end of the work is the door slam that shook the world. And Nora, as a sort of proto-feminist and self-actualized woman, is just an incredibly fascinating character. So it's interesting. I'll not quite answer the question. I'll go about it in a roundabout way. But one of the things that Lucas did as a writer is, you know, he came up with this idea and then he actually asked people, you know, what happened to Nora? What do you think happened to Nora? And in those conversations that he had, of which most of the outcomes were miserable and difficult, he decided that he would take on this character and really explore what might have happened to her. The play is set 15 years later. So A Doll's House is set Christmas, 1879, and A Doll's House Part 2 is set in Norway, 1894. However, the fascinating thing about this work is the language and idiom is absolutely contemporary. It is now. The work, yes, is set in 1897, but the rub of this contemporary language and energy and sensibility with the ideas that Ibsen was working with in A Doll's House. And in many ways, the play obviously deals with the consequences of Nora leaving her family behind, her husband and children, and just walking out the door.
Now, do you have to be familiar with A Doll's House to get anything from this play?
No, you do not have had to know Part 1 in any way whatsoever.
Well, you're so lucky here in Canberra, because just a few months ago, Rep did A Doll's House. Now, that was the first time I'd seen the play. I knew about it and all that, but I'd never actually seen a production of it. So I'm really curious to see what does happen to Nora.
Well, I should ask you, Bill, what do you think happens to Nora?
I don't know, and I actually felt I didn't much care. But then when the opportunity comes to find out, it makes me curious.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, she's a complex character, and there are obviously many sort of academic pieces on what motivated Nora to leave, and obviously on the situation in Norway at the time and the position of women in relation to their rights within a marriage and also outside a marriage. I guess one of the things that Lucas did is he wrote this work. So he developed the scenario. And actually, in A Doll's House Part 2, Nora returns to the place she left. I'll give a little bit away. She's got a very awkward favour to ask of everybody. So she has to go back. And of course, she really had no way of imagining the consequences of her actions. And it's a little bit like past and present meeting each other in both directions.
So we get to meet some of the people from her past. Again, we reacquaint with those.
Correct, yes.
So we find out what happened to them too.
Yes, that's right. It's quite delicious you know, as an idea.
Because I was rather more interested in the husband because I thought he's stuck now. He's got the three children. He was trying to be a good husband on the mores of the times. And he was obviously in love with her. But none of those were satisfying her because of the fact that she wasn't being treated the way that she wanted. So we go on.
Well, there's also sort of ideas of moral corruption in A Doll's House, of the fact that she's loaned money behind her husband's back and is deceiving him in terms of how she's handling the housekeeping money and saving that to pay off this debt that she should never have taken in the first place. So there is an idea in the original Doll's House of ethical and moral corruption and of maybe Nora understanding or seeing that, you know, what she has done will have very significant consequences if anybody finds out. So there's definitely many reasons or motivations for her to leave the house, including, I guess, a sense of more self-empowerment or actualization. But there are some pretty significant questions that are raised within the work for Nora. Well, what Lucas cleverly does is, he mashes up and mixes up these characters together. What I want people to feel like when they see the work is, you know, Nora comes back, the disruptor comes back to the site of disruption. She needs something, and how she goes about getting that or attempting to get it is quite interesting. And of course, as you say, Torvald, I mean, I would say he's somewhat of a weak character in A Doll's House. I mean, he doesn't have as much spine as you might want. It's interesting what we learn of him in A Doll's House Part 2 and what he's learned from Nora leaving and then what she learns about him in returning.
Such fun.
Well, it's delicious because it's full of twists and turns. You never quite know what's going to happen next. And that's the feeling that I really want an audience to have.
I'm talking with Carolyn Stacey about her forthcoming production for the Street Theatre, A Doll's House, Part 2.
The work is a very clever examination of the idea that behind every opinion is a person, and that really the work is it's a verbal battle of wits. I mean, to use a sporting metaphor, whether it's a squash court or a tennis court or a boxing ring, or there's a gladiatorial feel to the work. Everybody steps up to the plate with Nora. And Nora steps up to the plate with her old home and also those people in it.
And what she's been doing in the interim.
That's right, none of which you can ask me about because I'm not going to tell you. But, yeah, so we've tried to create a space that certainly references the sort of gladiator forums of, or, you know, Roman and Greek theatre. So there's vomitoriums for those people that are theatre people and understand that language. For those that are not, it's a little bit like going to a football match and the tunnel that everybody runs out of. That feeling is definitely in the work, the sense of a site of contention. Tension, also a forum. He says in the work that he wouldn't mind if the work was performed in the round. It is a forum. It's a place where ideas are wrestled with and wrangled with and battled out. And I would absolutely love it if audience members felt that they could stand up and go, "No, you're wrong," or "Stop right there," or "Listen to her," or "Listen to him." What do you know? So I really want the feeling of people being in it. And we've designed the set, Imogen Keen, a regular designer, and I have sort of talked about a space that brings that sort of sporting focus. It juts out into the auditorium, so it's a symbolic domestic interior. So it's not a naturalistic setting, but it does allow the sense of a space where there's nowhere to go. Like, you have to finish off the business in that space and then take the applause or the bow or exit stage left, as one of the character does. So that's been really important in the work. But the door is obviously a massive symbol. When Nora leaves in a doll's house, she slams the door behind us. And of course, how does this play begin? It begins with 3 or 4 or 5 knocks, actually, at the door. Big, gravitas-filling, bold knocks that actually give, you know, that symbol of the doorway, that the sort of portentousness of the space that's being stepped into, a space that is a pathway to a self-revelation or new understandings in a play that's very firmly rooted in how we all see things from our own point of view. So in looking at the costumes, everybody's dressed in period dress, but symbolically, it's a little bit like period costume drama meets worldwide wrestling. The characters really embody and manifest on every level their point of view. And it's really important to me when I think about questions we need to address in the work that everybody really holds their ground and fights for their position.
I can see you're going to have a lot of fun with this.
I absolutely hope so, Bill.
Caroline, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about it.
My pleasure, and I look very much to checking our notes and seeing if we agree that what happened to Nora was absolutely the way that both of us imagined it.
We'll have to do coffee afterwards and see it.
That sounds very pleasurable. Thank you.